Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. You're listening to Madison Rising, one of America's premier patriotic rock bands, who will be performing July 23rd at the High Grounds Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville. Now, that concert will be a small part of a week-long event called Operation Persian Gulf Welcome that honors those who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today, on an Independence Day weekend edition of Route 51, we will preview that event and talk about the reasons behind it, as we look deeper into the legacy of the conflicts in the Persian Gulf and the seemingly endless back and forth in the ongoing war against terror. Our guests for the next hour are Teresa Hebert, the event coordinator at the High Ground, Todd Stage, an Iraq combat veteran, and Lakeland Times reporter Brian Jopek, an Iraq War veteran who lost his son Ryan in that conflict and who will be speaking at the candlelight closing ceremony on July 25th. Now, as always, we want to hear from you. Do you think that our Persian Gulf veterans are getting the recognition they deserve? Will the war-torn region ever find long-term peace and stability? And how do we defeat terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda? And are the presidential candidates justified in calling the invasion of Iraq a mistake, as all three of them are doing? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today.
It's good to
Thanks
be here.
Thanks for having us.
And, boy, it's a perfect show to do right before the July 4th holiday. Teresa, why did you think that a week-long commemoration was important at this time at the High Ground?
Well, we did have the Persian Gulf tribute planned to be dedicated in July, and we thought there has to be more to this than a simple dedication ceremony. We've been seeing more and more Persian Gulf veterans coming to the High Ground, and as we get to know them and hear their stories, we wanted to develop a very special event, not only to recognize those that were lost in Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Iraq, and Afghanistan, but to honor the ones that served and are still serving and their families for their service and sacrifices. And we did recognize also that there are a number of them that come to the High Ground seeking help, a direction, because they're having a little trouble reentering a civilian life. And so as far as that goes, we wanted to have this event not only be a dedication of the tribute and to honor those that were lost, but to give people a step forward into the future.
Now, the event gets underway July 18th with a Wall of Remembrance escort, honoring those who lost their lives during the Persian Gulf conflicts and also those who died in the September 11th attacks here in the United States. Tell us about that.
Okay, the Wall of Remembrance, it's a very special memorial, traveling memorial. It came to the High Ground in 2014, and we're bringing it back. The Wall of Remembrance was founded by J.R. Nichols in California, and he thought it would be only a one-time thing. After September 11th, a couple years later, he developed the wall. It received such an outstanding response that he has it now traveling across the United States. And you're right, it does cover from September 11th all the civilian and professional EMTs, police, firefighters that were killed on September 11th, as well as Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Iraq, Afghanistan, and more current acts of terrorism in the United States.
And Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television are part of this effort. Our joint project, Wisconsin Remembers, a Face for Every Name exhibit recognizing every Wisconsinite lost in the Vietnam War, will also be at the Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home.
Correct. We'll have that on display along with our, we call it the big map of Vietnam, of the Vietnam War, and that will be on display all week at the High Ground.
Now, you wrap things up a week later, July 25th, with a candlelight closing ceremony.
Yes, and Brian is our speaker for that. That'll be a very special moving ceremony as well, 8 o'clock in the evening. And we do welcome everyone to come here through the whole week, but that candlelight closing ceremony will be very special.
Brian Jopek, let's turn to you. You're the one speaking that night. It's an event that honors those who served and those who lost their lives. It will be almost 10 years to the day that you lost your son Ryan in Iraq. That was August 1st, 2006. Mm-hmm. Just 20 years old. Have you been able to come to grips with that yet? Can you ever come to grips with something like that?
No. You never do. Anybody who's ever lost a kid for whatever reason, whether it's a war or a car wreck or illness, it's one of those things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. So, no, the short answer to your question is no. I don't know that I ever will come to grips with it. Doesn't mean that I, mope around and don't laugh and joke and stuff like that, but it's just one of those things that is always there. As a matter of fact, the 23rd, I think I've shared this with Teresa. I know I've shared it with June Berg at the High Ground, which, by the way, is one of my favorite places in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because I'm a veteran and what they do to honor veterans and their families and so on and so forth, but just because the area itself is pretty. That part of Wisconsin is just a pretty area, I think. But the 23rd of July will be the 10th anniversary this year of the last time I ever spoke to Ryan. So that day, I don't even know what to think about it. But
Ryan was just 20 years old.
He was 20. He turned 20 on June 1st of 2006, and he was home that last time. In the first couple of weeks of June, he was the last one in his unit to be on leave. And
he had just 2 weeks to go in his tour of duty.
Yeah,
he,
at the time of the incident, his unit was only going to be in country another couple of weeks. They came home, I think it was 2 days after he was buried, and I was there at Volk Field to greet them. I just felt I had to be there. And I talked to some of the guys and that sort of thing. So I just felt it was important. And the adjutant general at the time, Al Wilkening, he asked me if I wanted to be on the line greeting the troops as they came off the plane. He asked me if I wanted to do that. And I said, sure, sir. And I was there on the line and shaking the guys' hands as they came off the bird. It's like I told one of the TV stations when I was interviewed at the time. I felt I had to be there for them.
Well, I can still remember the funeral ceremony like it was yesterday. It seemed like everybody mm-hmm. in northern Wisconsin turned out for it.
It was a big funeral. We'd only been back in Wisconsin just a couple of years by then. Because Ryan spent his formative years in Kansas. He was born in Nebraska, and then we moved to Kansas, where I concluded my radio career. And then we moved to Wisconsin, and he'd only been in Merrill a couple of years. And the turnout for that funeral, I had people that I served with that were there that came up from Madison and other points. But the bulk of the people at that ceremony, at the funeral, in the gym, and at the cemetery itself, were local people.
Right,
and it was amazing that he had that type of effect on so many people in a relatively short amount of time.
And it was an improvised explosive device, or
correct,
an IED, near
correct
the city of
Crete.
To Crete.
Yeah, they had just left, my understanding is they had just left Forward Operating Base Spiker, which was on the main supply route Tampa, and which I was on a couple of years before on my unit's way up to Mosul in our convoy, and it wasn't long after they left Spiker is when the IED was triggered. The soldiers that were in the Humvee with him, the driver was able to get the Humvee out of what they call the kill zone. So to mitigate casualties, none of the other three guys were hurt physically, which is a good thing. Could have been a lot worse. But yeah, that was it was a I'm not sure how far outside Tikrit, but it was near Tikrit.
And having served in Iraq, you encountered things like that.
Right. I personally didn't, but on our way up to Mosul in 2004, in February of 2004, in our convoy, we saw evidence of IEDs. I mean, there were oil tankers that got hit not long before we went through. You were always on your guard. There was, I mean, because you just never knew. I mean, when we got to the Tikrit area, we actually did stop on Tampa. We had to stop because a semi that was in our convoy had a flat tire. So we had to stop the entire convoy so they could fix this flat. And while we were there, my first sergeant had Spiker in his binoculars. They were under attack by mortar attack. And you could see another convoy trying to leave Spiker, but they were being bracketed by mortars. And we were watching this on the side of the road. And then about 5 minutes later, Apaches came in and took care of the enemy. So I didn't experience that, the IED thing, myself. I had other experiences later on during my deployment that will never leave me. But IED in particular, I've never had to. I was never part of. But obviously, I can't watch any footage of anything like that without thinking about Ryan.
Todd, stage your reaction to what you just heard Brian say.
It brings back a lot of our welcome home stuff, and the parents of one of our casualties is still really close to our unit. Tom Gilbert died in Iraq October 25th in 2006, and Jonathan Thornsbury along with him. And his family has been real big in our welcome home, and he's still honored both at our units, and his parents run a Tommy's Kids fishing camp every year down in the Chicago area. But what struck me is just how similar experiences can be with combat vets, and they're both in their homecoming and what they go through.
How long have you been home?
I got back in May of 2007. So
you served in the Marine Corps?
In the Marine Corps, in the Fallujah area for Iraq.
In your experience, how did that affect you coming back and experiencing the war?
Well, at first, you couldn't tell me I was any different. There's quite a bit of a honeymoon phase when you first come back. You haven't seen your family in so long. You haven't had a beer. You haven't seen your girlfriend. And things are going good. And then the daily grind kind of comes in. And you realize you're a little bit more high-strung than everybody else. You realize you have trouble falling asleep. You realize when you do fall asleep that you wake up really easy. That things pop into your head that have nothing to do with what you're doing, but suddenly you remember that guy that got his leg shot as you were on your way to lunch. Mm-hmm. It takes a while to kind of sort that stuff out, and some people don't.
It's like I know when I came home, the operational tempo over there where we were was such. I was in a public affairs unit. We were involved in we had people out in the streets with Striker soldiers that were looking for the bad guys, you know, kicking down doors and that sort of thing. And we also our unit at the time was the first to have the what they call DVDs. It's a satellite that the Department of Defense had come out with, and we were able to broadcast items across all over the globe. And on June 24th, an example of this is June 24th, there were 11 Iraqi police stations in Mosul that were hit like almost simultaneously, just totally blew things apart.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Al-Qaeda, they were big on course, social media and everything, getting things out there. Yeah, we did this, we did that. One of the things that we had to do, I was part of a broadcast team that facilitated interviews between, at the time, the commander of Task Force Olympia, Brigadier General Carter Hamm, and like 11 or 12 major news networks worldwide that evening. And what the mission was to try to counter what Al-Qaeda was saying about what was going on. So Carter Hamm was pretty busy that night, as we were. I mean, he talked to CBS, he talked to ABC, NBC, Fox News, as well as Univision. I mean, all kinds of news networks all across the world. But that was just, and that's obviously today, that's still going on. You have ISIS, when something happens, they'll throw something on the internet. And
they are incredibly adept at using social media.
And that was part of what we were involved in our mission there in Mosul, was trying to counter some of that Al-Qaeda was throwing on the internet and the satellite.
And it sounds like you never forget it.
No.
Teresa Hebert, at the High Ground, you have services set up for veterans who are having problems adjusting to life back in the United States. Tell us about that.
We do. We have every other week we have a vet center counselor, free counseling for veterans. And also if we see somebody, or we always talk to everybody that comes through. We have porch greeters or volunteers that greet people as they come into the High Ground. Most of them are veterans themselves. And so when we're able to talk with everybody, if they come right out and tell us they're having problems, or we might sense they're having an issue, we have a book program for a PTSD books that we give out free of charge, with a handshake and a promise that they will read it or their families will read it when they no longer feel they need it. They pass it on to another veteran or family. And we also can refer them to seek out their CVSO. Or one of the vet centers in Wisconsin.
You have counselors who can help people?
We do it every other week. Mm-hmm. And during the Welcome Home, there will be vet center counselors at the High Ground every day.
If you just joined us, we've got a special Independence Day weekend edition of Route 51 underway. Teresa Hebert of the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park, and also two Iraq combat veterans, Todd Stage and Brian Jopek, who lost his son Ryan in that conflict just about 10 years ago this month. And the High Ground is featuring an Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home event that gets underway July 18th and goes for an entire week. And they've got a lot of things happening, and that's what we're talking about today. If you'd like to talk to our veterans who are with us today and share your thoughts about the service that they have given for their country and the service that so many have given for their country, tell us what you think about how veterans are being treated and the extent to which veterans of all wars are being treated with the respect they deserve. Our phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And if you put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, I'll read it on the air. Brian, go on.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to speak to something Todd mentioned before about the coming home thing. I don't know, and I don't know how many people have seen the Hurt Locker. Came out in 2008, was an Academy Award winner and all that sort of thing. Since then, I mean, I've seen it, and I thought it was great at first, but except for one thing, the uniforms were wrong for 2004. But that's just me. And over time, I've gotten to the point where I can't watch that movie because of other things. But there's one scene in that film towards the end that I think sums up things for a lot of people that came home, not just from Iraq or Afghanistan, but I think people that came home from Vietnam, I'm sure World War II, Korea. The operational tempo, I started talking about that before, was such, okay, in theater. You get home and you hit this brick wall. And that movie has a scene in it towards the end, excuse me, where this the Jeremy Renner character His wife sends him to the grocery store, and he's there in the cereal aisle. And, you know, and you can't help but think the same thing he's thinking. One minute you're in a wreck, you're getting shot at, and the next minute you're in the cereal aisle looking at a box of cereal for your kids. I can't help but think that there have been so many that have had to deal with that. Again, not just in Iraq, Afghanistan, but Vietnam. I've talked to Vietnam vets that have felt the same way. So I just wanted to put that out there. That one scene in that film is one that sticks with me.
Brian and Todd, maybe you can also let me know if this is the correct way. But we have an outstanding amount of Vietnam veterans that help at the High Ground, and they help welcome Iraq, Afghanistan veterans back. And I have been told by a couple of Vietnam veterans there that they say, you know, they served one or two tours, and they see that the men and women coming back now, they're four, five, six tours, and mm-hmm. what a toll that must play back and forth, back and forth.
I just did one.
Todd Stage?
I had only had one as well.
You know, in some ways, there are parallels between the Iraq War and Vietnam. Both were long, drawn-out conflicts, no clear resolution or victory. Both lost support with the American people. Both were described as mistakes by some of our political leaders. But the people who fought in the Persian Gulf conflicts, and thank God for this, they didn't face the open hostility and the insults and the taunts that returning Vietnam War veterans faced.
Mm-hmm. Although I have been called a baby killer a couple of times.
Really?
That happened. Well, the first time was before I went to Iraq. I was in downtown Madison on State Street in uniform, which I guess people could debate that might not be a wise thing to do. I just went down there to get some lunch.
You ought to be able to wear your uniform anywhere in this country, Brian.
Well, I would think so. And then the second time was after I got back. It was a few years after I had returned from Iraq and after Ryan was killed. It was by a Walgreens in Madison at 51 and at 151 and Stoughton Road, right there in the corner. Some guy getting into a bus. Again, I was in uniform going into Walgreens, and he just yelled out, "Baby killer," and that kind of thing. And that time, normally it probably wouldn't bother me, but by then, you know, like I said, Ryan had been killed. And so that sort of thing has happened to me.
Todd, have you had experiences like that, or you know other veterans who have?
I have. Nowhere near what the Vietnam vets went through.
Oh, no. No.
What was interesting going in 06, coming back in 07, it feels like that was the shift where support started to go down for the Iraq War. So I came home, and I think I had a health appointment, and I was reading a magazine, and it was such a switch from what the public opinion was before I had left, and you don't really get to kind of sample that while you're over there. And then to come back, it was kind of a shock that kind of life mm-hmm. went on and opinions had gone on without me really being here.
Right.
We're going to take a short break. Our guest today on Route 51, Teresa Hebert, the event coordinator at the High Ground, Todd Stage, Iraq combat veteran, and Lakeland Times reporter and Iraq War veteran Brian Jopek, who lost his son Ryan in that conflict. I'm Glenn Moberg. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742 or by putting a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. You'll also see a link to the High Ground website on that Facebook page. We're going to take a short break. Here's Trace Adkins with his song, Arlington.
There's a big white house. It's on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, "We're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like the Wausau River District and the Wisconsin Historical Society play a role in the success of WPR. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
Once again, a contemporary take on a patriotic classic by the band Madison Rising, which will be performing July 23rd at the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville, a small part of the week-long event called Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home, honoring the veterans of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today on Route 51, Teresa Hebert, the event coordinator at the High Ground, two combat veterans from Iraq, Todd Stage, and also Lakeland Times reporter and Iraq War veteran Brian Jopek. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. So, Teresa, we have, as we've already described, the Wall of Remembrance escort starting off the event, and then you've got opening ceremonies on July 19th. What's going to happen on that day?
Correct. Well, just to go back to the escort, if you'd like to join the escort, it starts in Madison at the Madison Harley-Davidson. Just give the High Ground a call to get joined up with that. On Tuesday, July 19th, we have our opening ceremony at 4:30, the media reception. At 6 o'clock, the ceremony itself. Neillsville Mayor Steve Mabee will be there. Julie McNeely, she represents an organization that really helped us get this event going, MDRT, Million Dollar Roundtable, and we thank them so much for their support. And Brian Barth will also be a speaker. Every day we'll have bagpipes being played at sunset. We'll have the Wall of Remembrance, we'll have the Persian Gulf Tribute dedicated, and we're going to have several different memorial displays, patriotic vehicles, and we'll have Walter, which maybe Ryan can describe what Walter is.
Walter is Ryan's truck.
Correct. Walter is basically, it's a 66 Chevy half-ton pickup truck that as Ryan was growing up, he picked up my knack for liking old cars and trucks and that sort of thing. So he turned 14. He had some money saved up from mowing yards and delivering the newspaper and that sort of thing. And he got his learner's permit, and he begged his mother and I to let him get a vehicle. So a friend of ours had this 66 Chevy half-ton that he drove back and forth to work every day. And Ryan saw this thing. It had, like, vice grips for door handles and that sort of thing. And he fell in love with this thing. And he had told the guy what he wanted to do with it. He would someday restore it to stock with the exception of nice tires and nice wheels. And a V8 engine. It had a 250 straight six in it. But anyway, and then we moved up here, and he drove it to work. He drove it to school. And after he was lost, a bunch of businesses and people got together, and they redid it from the frame up to like new condition. So I take it to car shows when I can. His mom runs it in parades, and it's named Walter for Walter Payton of the Bears. So, because we're Bear fans. I don't know if I should say that or not.
That's probably the most controversial thing you're going to say today. And there is an event that took place over the Memorial Day weekend in memory of Ryan, the Ruck Run and Remember.
Correct.
Helping raise money for scholarships.
Yeah, there's been a scholarship at Merrill High School since 2007 in Ryan's name, and this event that was held on May 28th was something that his mother, Tracy, and his sister, Jessica, and brother, Stephen, put together. And they ended up raised something like $5,000 for this, for the scholarship. And it was just really nice to see a lot of people there show up there, even though the weather wasn't the greatest. Stephen, my youngest boy, is in the National Guard. He headed up the ruck part, you know, got all these hooah guys out there rucking the thing. And, they ended up raising about $5,000. And it turned out really well.
What would Ryan say if he could see that truck now?
I tell people when I take it to car shows that if Ryan could be there, he would be the one telling them what was done to fix into, because that was his baby. I mean, that truck, the last time he was home, he didn't get to drive it that much because of mechanical problems. And when the North Central Technical School, automotive class and restored the frame portion. It was brought down here to Wausau and had the frame was all redone, and that's where the engine was put in after it was overhauled. And the instructor at the time told Ryan's mom that he probably wouldn't have been able to get more than 50 or 60 miles with it, because when they took the rear end apart, a lot of the seals and bearings were shot in Walter. The truck was almost 50 years old, so I mean it'd been around the block. But he would absolutely love it.
And you brought it back.
Yes, and like I said, I take it to car shows when I can, and people will ask, and I tell them, you know, they'll want to hear the story about Ryan and Walter, and that's. And so I share it with them. And I don't take the truck to car shows for trophies. A lot of people that do those shows, that's what they're there for. They're there to get trophies for their cars and that sort of thing. I take it if Walter wins trophies, and it has, that's great. But if I can tell one person about Walter and Ryan in that 6-hour car show, I've achieved what I was there for.
To share the story. On stage, it's been 10 years since Brian Jopek lost his little boy. With people who serve overseas, serve in Iraq, when something like that occurs, you hang on to it forever.
It definitely stays with you. It'll come back when you think it's not going to come back or come up. You catch it watching the movies or just watching the TV, or something. A song will come on that'll remind you of the person that you lost. Mm-hmm. And then, in the general sense, the news is a great thing to remind you of all the bad things that are out there. So there's a lot of reminders out there.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Paul in Tomahawk. Paul, you're on Route 51.
Hey, good morning. I just want to respond to comment earlier about people calling veterans baby killers and things like that. You know, I was against the second Iraq invasion right from the beginning because I knew it was going to be a huge mistake. But I think most people always honor the people who serve. You know, they stepped up, answered the call, and I don't think that's the general opinion of the vast majority of people in this country. Thanks.
Paul, thanks so much
Thank you.
For the phone call. Todd?
Not sure what to say to that. The Iraq War is a pretty controversial subject nowadays, but what we knew at the time, I think it was worth the risk, I suppose, having been one of the ones over there. It sure is a mess, but I can't say that we didn't make a positive impact over there. There are a lot of people that had it pretty rough under the previous regime.
Mm-hmm. And to Paul's mm-hmm. point, regardless of what you think of the war itself and the politics behind it, the people who fought, the veterans who did everything they could deserve our utmost respect and love.
And that's that's what I would say as well. I mean, I have my opinions of the whole thing, but I think, yes, regardless of what your political views are, like my parents, for example, vehemently against that Iraq invasion, but they never, ever once stopped supporting myself or my son, or he was their first grandson when he went over. They never, ever once stopped supporting us.
Well, how do veterans in general of these conflicts react to the comments of presidential candidates? Bernie Sanders voted against the Iraq invasion. He's made Hillary Clinton's vote in favor of it a central part of his campaign. Hillary Clinton now says the invasion was a mistake. Donald Trump says he was opposed to the Iraq war before it started, which is a comment that has been fact-checked if you want to look into that. But how do you react as people who served in combat in Iraq when you hear comments like that from the presidential candidates?
With me anymore, I've become so cynical when it comes to politics in general. And the current batch we have running for president, I personally am not impressed with at all, especially Mr. Trump. I really can't stand him. But I'm not a big – I'm just not a big fan of what's going on with the presidential election this year. It's just not – it is not anything I'm very proud of.
And Todd, have you talked to other veterans and gotten their take on what's going on?
Well, I mean, I've talked to a broad spectrum of veterans, and I get a broad spectrum of answers. I tend to lean towards what was just said. I wish there was a D category where you could just say none of the above,
exactly,
and have that take effect. But so far as to your question, I do get tired of the politicians kind of using what is very personal for me to score points for the day, and then when the winds of political change
then they forget about you.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about something that Donald Trump said. This man has never served overseas, but he is calling for torture, as he did yesterday. He said about waterboarding, quote, "I like it a lot, but I don't think it's tough enough." He's called for banning all Muslims from entering the United States. Is that helpful to our troops?
Personally, I don't think so in the long run. I mean, my personal interactions with Muslims over time has been pretty positive. We had Iraqis serving with us in Mosul that came to work. We worked out of the Saddam Hussein's palace there in the palace complex in Mosul, and we had Iraqis working with us every day as interpreters. We had Iraqis when we did tower duty.
Well, what you're saying is you worked alongside Muslims, yes, when you were,
yes,
in Iraq.
Yes, we had Muslims living with us. I'm just going to say this mentality that every single Muslim is evil, to me, is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. It is just not the case.
And Teresa Hebert, many Muslims have served in the armed forces.
Correct.
Many of them are buried in Arlington.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with Brian.
Let's go back to the phones. Well, go on, Todd, please.
Jump in on that just real quick. If you look at what just the cold political calculus of it, you're not going to scare ISIS by saying, you know, you're going to waterboard them.
No.
You're not going to change how they treat our troops because they're going to torture them anyway. But all you're accomplishing with a statement like that is insulting those Muslims that did serve with us, are in our service. I know a gentleman that served 6 units in a row in Fallujah as an interpreter. So where we got to go home, he just went to the next unit. And after 6 times, he finally got smart enough and said enough. But his service to our country, thankfully now he's a citizen of our country, and I'm glad and proud to have him, and he's Muslim.
Let's give some equal time here. Secretary Clinton has been investigated for her role in the Benghazi attack. Congress just released an 800-page report. Bumper sticker, Hillary Clinton lied, people died. If she's elected, how would she be able to rally the country behind her when polls indicate that so many people don't trust her?
I have no idea.
It's going to take a smarter man than me to figure that one out.
I really don't know.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Patrick in Merrill. Patrick, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. I never met Ryan, but my nephew, who lives across the street from us, had him over for one day when he was back from his tour, and this car comes down the driveway. It's a Mustang. Hmm. And my nephew, being 20 years old, I go, "Who's your buddy with the car?" "Oh, that's Joe Peck. He's overseas in Iraq." 10 days later, he called and said, "He's dead." It was just so sad. I never met him, but he did his tour.
Patrick, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
I think we're going to take another break here. If you just joined us, our guests on Route 51, Teresa Hebert, the event coordinator of the High Ground, also two combat veterans, Todd Stage, and Lakeland Times reporter and Iraq War veteran Brian Jopek. I'm Glenn Moberg. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Here's Bob Dylan.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? Yes, and how many seas must a white dove see before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is a blowing in. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Early Music Now, Douglas Nelson Dentistry, and High Noon Saloon. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollop, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollop, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
And now, to honor America, especially the brave men and women serving our nation in the Persian Gulf and throughout the world, please join in the singing of our national anthem.
A 27-year-old Whitney Houston performing the Star-Spangled Banner in 1991 at Super Bowl 25, just days after President George H.W. Bush began combat operations against Saddam Hussein in the first Gulf War, in what would become a successful effort to roll back his invasion of Kuwait. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we're honoring the veterans of the first Gulf War and the conflicts that followed as we discuss the upcoming week-long event at the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville, with Teresa Hebert, the event coordinator there, Todd Stage, an Iraq combat veteran, and Lakeland Times reporter and Iraq War veteran, Brian Jopek. Teresa, you have a separate day set aside for the people in all of the various conflicts that have taken place in the Middle East.
Yes, we do. I mean, the entire week is dedicated to all the veterans, but we put special recognition on each day with a special ceremony and with the speaker that would be a veteran of that combat. Also, we do have several Gold Star family speakers.
Well, let's run down the days and the specific events for people who want to pick certain days to attend.
On Wednesday, July 20th, the special recognition ceremony for Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Thursday, July 21st, are those that served in Afghanistan. Friday, July 22nd, those who served in Iraq. Saturday, July 23rd is our big dedication day of the Persian Gulf Tribute. We have a full day of ceremonies. At 5:30 is the actual dedication ceremony. and that following the dedication is the Madison Rising concert. Sunday, July 24th, we take a little breather. It's Family Day, where we recognize the families that supported those that were serving. We have free things for families, including activities for the children. Maggie Mae Hilliard will be playing music after the 6 p.m. ceremony. And Gordy's Market's going to be providing a free family picnic.
And for people who want to check out the High Ground, you've got an Independence Day celebration on Monday, on July 4th.
Yes, we do. We have Captain Hayes as our speaker from Fort McCoy, and that's at 10 a.m.
Do Americans appreciate the meaning of Independence Day and Memorial Day, or are all these events all too often looked at merely as three-day weekends and time to spend at the beach and time to picnic?
Well, as far as Memorial Day goes, that's one that's pretty close to me. It seems like over time, Memorial Day and Veterans Day are getting commingled. Memorial Day, if you look at the history of it, is something set aside to remember those lost in the nation's wars.
And it used to be celebrated on May 30th every
Correct.
Year, not on the last Monday in May.
Right. But here, you know, lately, the last several years now, I'm seeing, you know, the veterans thing getting mixed into it. And Veterans Day is, for us, those of us who were able to come back, that's the way I feel about it.
A lot of vets feel that way where, you know, someone thanking you for your service on Memorial Day, you kind of grind your teeth a little bit and smile and thank them. But
yeah, you do that because you can't. I mean, they're thanking you. What are you going to do, beat them up in the street? No, yeah. You don't do that. But that's just the way, yeah, a lot of people, a lot of vets feel that they are two different events, two different days.
You know, our wars now are all fought by volunteers, not by the general population. We don't have a draft anymore like we did in Vietnam. Some have called for a return to the draft or some form of mandatory national service. What do you think? Todd, do you think that would be a good idea?
I've always loved that idea. I believe Israel has a two-year minimum service. Germany has a civil service where you have to pick something. And I think that's a good model, especially with today's youth.
Mm-hmm. Because right now only 1% of the nation serves.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have to be just the military. They could go
precisely
civil service or
Peace Corps. I mean, something like that, something to serve in some capacity for a year or two, or just to get an idea of what it is to serve.
We're almost out of time, and I want to close with a quote by Dwight David Eisenhower, especially in light of opinions people have about our conflicts and our wars who have never served. General Eisenhower said, quote, "I hate war as only a soldier who lived it can, only one who has seen its brutality, its futility, and its stupidity."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why there's a huge disconnect between politicians who have never served compared to those who, like Eisenhower, did and do have some sort of idea.
And he also said, only our individual faith in freedom can keep us free. Some would add freedom isn't free.
It's something, I'm going to mangle the quote, but Jefferson said it needs to be renewed with the blood of patriots, and that might be democracy. But it is something that you have to show the rest of the world that, you know, we're not going to let certain things slide.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's carried by the military.
Teresa Hebert, what has the High Ground meant to people in north central Wisconsin? And I'm afraid you've only got 20 seconds.
Well, I think, as Brian had said, as veterans, it's a place they can go. They know they're going to be around other veterans and of all eras. And I think it's just a great place for a community of veterans to meet each other and be able to share their stories, which maybe they only want to share with other veterans.
Hope we see a lot of people out there the week of July 18th.
Mm-hmm.
America! America!
We want to thank today's guests, Teresa Hebert, event coordinator at the High Ground, Todd Stage, Iraq combat veteran, and Lakeland Times reporter and Iraq War veteran, Brian Jopek, who will be speaking July 25th at the candlelight closing ceremony of Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home. That week-long event gets underway July 18th. You can find out more about it and about the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park at theHighGround.org. There is also a link to that page on our Facebook page. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Madison Rising, Trace Atkins, Bob Dylan, Whitney Houston, and Ray Charles. Next Thursday on Route 51, we look at the influence of drum and bugle corps on American culture as we preview the Riverside Rhapsody, which takes place at DC Everest Steam Stadium July 14th. Thanks for riding along with us today. Remember our veterans this Independence Day weekend. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town. I'm talking about...